Welcome to the Future of Pharma with ISP Boston, where I talk to the thought leaders of the pharmaceutical industry about where our industry is headed and what you can do about it. I'm your host, Samir Gondalia. Thanks for joining us today. Our guest today is Jack Campion. Jack is principal at the Heart Companies. He's the immediate past president of the ISP Boston area chapter. I have known and worked with Jack for many years in our capacity as the ISP Boston board of directors and as volunteers on other committees. Let's hear Jack's thoughts on new and emerging developments in our industry and what it means for the future of pharma.
Good morning, Jack. Welcome to the Future of Pharma with ISP Boston podcast series.
Good morning, Samir. It's great to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about your professional background for our audience?
My undergrad degree was in chemistry, actually, and I was actually had my eyes on going into medicine at one point, but spending some time in a hospital convinced me that although it's rewarding work, it wasn't going to be for me. So meanwhile, I read an article in the American Chemical Society magazine called Chemical and Engineering News about this new field, biochemical engineering, and it was expressed the need for engineers who would have an understanding and a background in biology and biochemistry, and that was attractive to me. I later was able to find a program, Tufts University. I was able to get into their master's program, and I landed in the environmental field, which was going gangbusters at the time. So I spent eight years cleaning up hazardous waste sites and controlling air emissions and wastewater discharges, which was a very educational experience. I'm glad I had that. But then I did survive that, and I met the folks who were actually starting the Boston chapter at the time, and this was in the Kendall Square area. So Hank Mose, Dick Priester, a few others.
Everything starts from Kendall Square.
It's the center of the universe from a technology standpoint, has been for a long time.
Boston area, our audience, you know, Kendall Square, Cambridge, Massachusetts, that's what Jack is referring to.
I once heard Kendall Square described as the place with the most engineers per square foot as any place on earth. So, but now there was this burgeoning biotech industry, Biogen at the time sort of being the cornerstone, but numerous other companies starting to blossom in the area. So I jumped in and became involved in ISPE, and that led me to my first opportunity for employment in the industry. There was a board member whose name was George Enos. George is still around, still active in the industry, and they had an opening at the firm I'm currently at as well, Heart Design Group.
You're still there.
And I'm back there, but that's another story. More new, great experiences, different products, lots of changes, so navigating through that. And then 5 years ago, the opportunity came to go back to Heart in a different role in business development, and that's where I've been for the last 5 years. It's been terrific.
What technologies and new development do you see coming into the market that will have huge impact on the pharmaceutical industry?
That's a great question, and there are quite a number of new technologies and developments out there, Samir, that I think are going to have a lot of impact on our industry and manufacturing therapies. I'll say that probably the first one is individualized medicine or autologous therapies. And from a manufacturing standpoint, that's really driving what I'll call miniaturization and modularization of the manufacturing process.
Gene therapy, cell therapy, or something more specific?
Sure. Cell therapies, typically it's like the CAR-T-cell technology, the Kymriah Novartis is a typical example, that are because of the need for individual patient-specific production and individualized production is driving the size down and down and down to the point where I've seen one commenter put it that it's at patient scale manufacturing. Kind of an interesting thought. So, and literally there are conversations, discussions about bedside production, where a unit would literally be with the patient, in the patient's room, in the clinical setting.
So I take it this must be still at the blueprint design level, right?
Oh, sure. I think it's even prior to that. I think it's at the cerebral level.
It's heart of a guy with a beer in his hand, right?
Sure. But it's when you think about the other developments in medicine and in therapies, it's not so far-fetched.
Right.
But there is a downside to it, and that is that miniaturization and modularization, they become products themselves. And so in order to gain the quality advantages of production and the economies of scale, you need to standardize. And sometimes standardization doesn't allow enough flexibility in design to satisfy end users. producers or production companies, pharmaceutical companies. So we've seen that happen, for example, in the single-use market. Well, that itself has grown and burgeoned and developed both towards miniaturization as well as toward ever larger scale, you know, 2,000 liter plus. There's a demand for customization, and the companies that are producing these equipment really do best when they are making standard equipment. And it's not always easy for end users to get customized process-specific equipment that they want.
In that case, though, it would be easier to make standard single-use equipment and technology because you can get people to buy those things. If we talk about individual medicine, it is going to be much more specific than that, right? Because you're going to need lots of individual data if you are going to customize the medicine.
Sure. The development in these therapies is going to keep developing so that we're going to find out that an individual patient needs different critical process parameter ranges than another patient, than the last one that did. So that the ability of the equipment to adapt and produce the therapy, the drug that a given patient is going to need, is going to become crucial. So
what are the trends in technology that excites you?
The other technologies on the horizon that I see, some of them are things we already know about. I mentioned single use. There's the march, I'll say, of continuous march forward of continuous processing and process analytical technology.
What do you think is the end result of single-use technology? Like, when will we know 6,000-liter single-use bioreactor, or we have disposable column, or, you know, we've been here about single-use technology. It started with buffer bags 15 years ago.
That's a difficult question. I don't think there's a single answer. What has become apparent is that when a company is deciding whether to go single-use or to go with a traditional stainless steel, it's very, very product-specific and facility-specific, so that there's just no way to get the right answer without doing the analysis, modeling it both ways,
right,
from an economic standpoint especially.
What are your thoughts on continuous manufacturing?
I also think that's going to explode, if you will. We're seeing processes of products being produced by traditional methods, by traditional cell culture methods, now going batch cell culture methods and batch purification methods now being adapted to continuous processing. So in terms of other things that are on the horizon, one I find interesting is the use of cloud computing for GMP data.
Oh, yes.
I read recently about companies going that way. In particular, one close by, Dirna, for their new facility in Norwood, has gone directly to the cloud for storage and retrieval of their current GMP data, not just for archiving purposes as has been traditional. So that's a big vote of confidence for the cloud, if you will.
Right. The safety and regulation, I think those were the two big hurdles. Can you secure the data? Because pharmaceutical companies or healthcare companies, as a rule, we have very, very sensitive information on people. The pharma industry is a data warehouse. We collect so much data. Where we are a little short is converting that data into wisdom and knowledge. So I think that's what it's a little slow. When you compare the data analytics done in, say, retail or automobile industry or finance,
I totally agree. I have a close relative who is in the medical analytics field, and imagine taking patient data, insurance claims data, etc., turning an artificial intelligence engine loose on that and finding trends, finding correlations that you couldn't otherwise imagine.
Who do you feel are going to be the drivers and players in this field?
I would say, over the long run, I feel that the companies who are developing their own manufacturing capability are going to be the centers of excellence. They're going to be the centers around which the industry orbits, if you will.
Manufacturers.
Yeah. Every product that comes out of the lab ultimately needs a place to be manufactured.
Right,
and
right.
Companies that know how to do that, know how to do it well, are adaptable, can shorten the development timelines, those are the ones that are going to thrive, and whether it's a CMO, CDMO, or a proprietary company.
With all this trend, how can someone prepare for this change in the pharma industry?
One of the challenges right now that manufacturers have is the talent pool, which is pretty thin right now. The number of experienced people with technical training regarding manufacturing is very challenging right now. So
really?
Getting qualified people is difficult.
So you're talking about New England, Boston, or pharma industry in general, in like San Fran, North Carolina?
Certainly here in the Boston area, that's absolutely true. And from speaking with other leaders in other chapters around the country, it's true there as well. I think evidence is the number of of openings you see on job boards, ISP job boards, the number of recruiters that will be at the upcoming ISP product show are all marks of that particular trend. So with respect to how to adapt to it, I would say look for opportunities to add to your skill set, adapt your skill set to the new technologies that are coming out, whether they are within your own company or whether they are within the industry in the area. Find out what is happening out there technologically and talk to people, go to ISP meetings, find out what skills are in demand, find out what speaks to you, and seek opportunities for learning.
And some of these skills are pretty transferable. I mean, if you're working in biologics, you can easily get your foot inside the door of cell therapy or stem cell, because like the technology is the same, even if the process might be different. Changes are always very exciting. You know, something new happens and it's all big, beautiful, and awesome. Anything that concerns you with all the changes, like too soon, too big, too fast?
Nothing specifically concerns me too much. I would say that there is certainly an exploration happening right now within the cell therapy, the autologous therapies, about whether those will be, as I mentioned earlier, at the bedside or whether they will be centralized and distributed. So there is kind of a raging debate right now out there in the industries as to which way it will go. I think the answer is going to be some of both. I would say that there's some danger in the regulations being pushed one way or the other. I would suggest that there needs to be careful consideration as this develops from a regulatory perspective so that risk and availability are balanced.
Now that your tenure as ISP Boston Area Chapter President is over, what other exciting things are you working on with ISP and in general?
Now that I'm the immediate past president, my duties are not at all subsiding, it seems. I'm going to be remaining on the board of directors for the coming program year, and as well as being appointed as the liaison to board of directors for the Scholarship Foundation, our new scholarship foundation, which I'm excited about. And it's particularly gratifying for me because I knew the namesake of the scholarship program, Joel Goldenberg, a board member from the early to mid-90s. Yes, he was something of a mentor to me, and it's gratifying. I'm going to also stay active in the Women in Pharma program, which is another new initiative, which is off the ground and really flourishing. And we have the industry advisory board. So I will have plenty to do this coming year and beyond. And I'm going to be remaining quite active in our chapter and a little bit more internationally as well.
So you mentioned that you got your first job through someone you knew through ISPE. So what has been your involvement with ISP lately, last say 5 years, and how has that benefited you?
There was a period of time where I kind of became inactive and became a Boy Scout leader for a while, but when I came back to being an active volunteer, I joined the Educational Program Committee, chaired that for a couple of years, was then asked to join the board, which I did, and this time around became the treasurer, vice president, and just completing my year as president.
What separates ISPE from other nonprofit organizations out there?
If you compare some of the other organizations that cater to engineering professions, such as AICHE, the American Institute of Chemical Engineers, that's a great place for, which I am a member,
American
Chemical Society. Those are broadly, provide, if you will, broad exposure to what's going on in the chemical engineering field, or the chemistry field, the chemical industry. But to really get to stay on top of what's happening in the pharmaceutical field, ISPE is the place to be. But the other point about ISP is that it is, unlike AICHE, for example, it's more broadly caters to individuals who are involved in pharmaceutical manufacturing. And that includes people in the regulatory arena, people in operations, people who deal with facilities and changes to facilities, adaptations, controls, and so forth. And those professions are not served by a pure engineering organization.
That's right.
Like the others.
What advice would you give to a young professional in the pharma industry? Someone who has just joined, person is just happy to have a job because he or she was studying. Now the person has a job.
the number one thing I would recommend to a young professional is to find a professional organization such as ISPE, could be one of the others out there, where the individuals in that organization, the members, do what you want to do and network, participate in their activities, read their publications, stay in contact with those professionals. The nice thing about professional organizations is that people are there for the same purpose that you want. They're there to learn. They're there to network. And they're going to be more than obliging with respect to passing their knowledge on to you. A second piece I would say is to raise your hand and get as many different experiences as you possibly can wherever you are.
Do you have any beliefs about the pharmaceutical industry that other people think is insane or at least unorthodox?
Well, let's see. That's hard. The ideas come up frequently and they seem crazy, such as the whole single-use ideas. When it was first introduced, kind of looked crazy, right? Instead of stainless steel tanks and
continuous manufacturing
pipes.
Yeah, 5 years ago, that was like continuous manufacturing will never work because the regulators won't approve it. And now, every conference you go to, there are at least 4 presenters who talk about continuous manufacturing and people want to hear about it.
Sure. So that's not crazy at all. There are technical problems involved and risk hurdles to confront. Gosh, crazy ideas. I'm loath to dismiss anything as crazy at this point. There are just so many new ideas out there. One I heard within the last couple of years was insect cell culture. So that it sounds like something we wouldn't want anything to do with. But, you know, in point of fact, there are things that insects do extremely well that other species don't, and we want some of those properties. And so let's find cell lines derived from insects that do what we want them to do.
That's what they did in Jurassic Park, right?
Sure.
That seemed crazy at the time, right?
Yeah.
And in the 90s when Michael Crichton, he wrote the book, that seemed impossible and crazy. But now, you and I are talking about insect cell line.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things that we think are crazy today might become a reality in 1 or 2 decades. Which books have you given the most as gift, or which books have you been most influenced by?
Probably the book that's been most influential to me and that I have turned encouraged others to read is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
By Stephen Covey,
yes. I've been going back to it. I've read it several times, gone back to it several times, and I'm always refreshed. Few key ideas in there that if you can adopt and change your mindset on, I'll mention one. The first habit is to be proactive as opposed to being reactive.
Right.
So just thinking through your day, thinking through your week ahead, how are there ways that I could be proactive instead of reactive?
So I take it you plan your whole week Sunday night?
That's what I try to do. I don't always actually do it, but certainly when I plan out my week on a Sunday afternoon, things go a lot better. And you start by putting down the things that you know you have to do.
Do you have any favorite quote you live by or think of very often?
Oh, sure. There's one that comes to mind. It was comes from my sophomore high school English teacher. His name was Brother David Lazat, and he was fond of quoting a line from Hamlet, and it goes like this: "To thine own self be true, and it shall follow as night follows day, that thou canst not then be false to any man."
You'll have to translate it for us.
In simple terms, it's never lie to yourself, nor try to lie, and nor anyone, because by being truthful at all times to yourself, never denying reality, never denying others' beliefs, then you yourself will be seen as a truthful, open person. And it's something I try to live by, and at all times just be as authentic as I can in what I say and what I think and what I believe.
Do you have any ask or request for our audience? Any parting words?
For the audience, I would say that with regard to ISPE, to get involved in some small way. Everyone is busy out there, for sure, but there are so many different opportunities opportunities to contribute and make the society greater, you will get back tenfold what you give.
And they can find ISP at www.ispboston.org, Boston Area Chapter, or they can go to www.isp.org and find the local chapter and get involved.
Absolutely.
It's an international organization and you can join anywhere. Went to China a few months back and I met a guy who was a president of the ISP Shanghai Area Chapter. So that was born. We talked about it, we connected and we shared some information.
Excellent.
So, Jed, thank you so much for talking to us, and we are looking forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, Samir. It's been a pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and let others know. Word of mouth is our oxygen. Visit www.ispeboston.org for the comprehensive show notes from today's episode and also find out more ways to associate with us. Do let us know your thoughts in the comment section, and if there is someone you'd like to see as a guest on this show, thanks again for joining us today. We'll see you next time.